Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
So the United Nations is developing two new global compacts, one on refugees and one for safe, orderly and regular migration. This is interesting. The Director of Jesuit Refugee Services here in Australia is Carolina Gotardo. And she's been engaged at a high level in the development of those important global compacts as a kind of observer to the UN discussions on these things. She was recently in New York participating in the second round of official member state negotiations on this global compact on migration in her capacity of civil society observer. I'd love that on my business card, civil society observer. I'm a CSO. And advocate. I'm a CSOA. Carolina says Australia has advocated strongly for human rights in discussions on the issue in the UN, and you might find that just a touch surprising, as I did. But she warns that our practices on the ground don't live up to the rhetoric Australia expounds in international forums, like the issue, like the way we've dealt with the boat arrivals issue. Carolina Gotardo, welcome to Open House.
Thank you so much.
Did you regard your time observing the UN sessions as positive?
I do. I think it's very important for members of the civil society and organizations like JRS Australia to know what is happening at the UN level. And to try to get the best or try to influence positively these kind of global negotiations that are so important for refugees and migrants on the ground.
What is the UN trying to achieve through these global compacts that they've been negotiating and indeed consulting on?
With the Global Compact on Migration, this is the first time that at the global level there is going to be some sort of agreement about international migration flows. So it's going to cover all different member states trying to improve the way migration is managed at the global level. And it's an enormous opportunity because it's also looking at the rights of migrants and migrants in vulnerable situations, considering that at this point there is no such international agreement on migration.
How far away are they from reaching an agreement on this one?
In July, the negotiations will be completed. And it's expected that the Global Compact will be adopted in December in Morocco.
Now, that won't be binding on member states, will it?
No, the Global Compact on Migration is not going to be binding on member states, but they are agreeing with its principles. So it will, even if it's not legally binding, it will operate as a guiding compact to show states how to manage migration at the kind of global level.
Yes. So how friendly has the Australian government been towards the negotiations so far?
So the Australian government has been very interested in the negotiations in the Global Compact on Migration and is taking kind of a leadership role in the negotiations. They are presenting their statements on most of the sessions and on most of the rounds. They are also very actively engaged on the Global Compact on Refugees, which is in, this is not a negotiation, but this is a consultation led by UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency in Geneva. And they are being quite active on that agenda as well. The Australian government has a specific agenda on migration. And there is, at the global level, there is not necessarily agreement on all the different points in terms of mainly differences in between countries of origin and countries of destination.
Our guest on Open House is Carolina Gotardo, and she's the Director of Jesuit Refugee Services. What changes would Australia need to make if these two compacts were adopted?
I think it is very important for the Australian government. I mean, Australia is sitting in the Human Rights Council now, and I think Australia in the negotiations has been outspoken about the importance of human rights. And I think it is important that what Australia says in terms of ensuring the prevalence of the human rights of migrants and refugees is taken to the practice level, meaning that there should be a prevalence on these rights.
Well, that's rather diplomatic of you. Are we doing, compared to what the objective is Australia doing well or not well at the moment?
The problem with the position of the Australian government is that it is very much centered on border control.
Yes.
And what they call well-managed migration policies. But in reality, if you look at, for instance, the turning back of the boats, and if you look at offshore processing, those are policies that are breaking international law, and are even curtailing the right to seek asylum of people that are just seeking protection. So there are very problematic issues, for instance, indefinite mandatory detention and what is happening in Nauru and in Manus. So that's why I was saying before that it is important to talk about human rights, but to ensure that that's translated from that talk into the ground and that international legislation is respected and is implemented.
Indeed. So if Australia says one thing but does another, what does that do to our credibility at the United Nations? I mean, you were there as an observer for these discussions and you've been involved for a couple of years now. Do people listen to what Australia has to say, or do they point out the apparent hypocrisy of our position?
Well, the problem with the negotiations is that the negotiations are with member states, so the speakers are member states. So what happens is that often the positions of member states could be quite different on certain issues. So Australia might sit with other countries on one side of the fence, whereas other countries might sit on the other side of the fence, but no country attacks each other directly. It's just about what sort of positions they are defending. So Australia is defending very strong border control policies, whereas there are other countries in around the world that might be very much focusing about the rights of migrants in countries of origin, transit, and destination and return. So, but no countries don't attack each other within the negotiations, because it's a negotiation process. It's just about what sort of arguments they are making that are stronger, and it's very important to ensure that this leads to something concrete and something that has a meaning for migrants and refugees. And doesn't kind of follow blindly the interests of certain member states.
Yes, well, the rules of the game of diplomacy are beyond many people. Our guest is Carolina Guttardo, Director of Jesuit Refugee Services. Now, while all of that's going on and there are positive signs that there may be a new global agreement about refugees and migration, back in Australia, we're still anticipating some pretty heavy changes in the upcoming budget, or maybe you've already seen these on the ground. This support payment for people on temporary protection visas, has it now been completely cut? Is that correct?
Well, what happens is that the government from last year has been implementing some changes in the what is called SRSF, which is kind of the public assistance to people seeking asylum where the claims are being decided. But it's a big worry that these changes are expected to be much broader and are expected to affect large numbers of people that could end up in destitution. And this is going to have enormous effects, not only for people working in the refugee and asylum sector, but for all the services in our communities, for homeless services, for community services, etc. Because part of what the government is doing right now is that they are going to be assessing people as being work ready or as not being work ready. And it's expected that the vast majority will be assessed as work ready and will be exited in around 7 to 10 days. While, for instance, an organization like JRS, we have always wanted people to be able to work. We have advocated for work rights, and we think that most people, actually, if they are given the chance to find employment, they will do extremely well, because refugees and asylum seekers are very resilient. There are people that shouldn't be exited into the institution. There are people in extremely vulnerable circumstances who have been waiting for years for the claim to finish or to get into some sort of result, whose mental health has been severely affected by this limbo situation, who are in our community and who could have children and don't have any kind of money to...
Yeah. So your suggestion is that, and you're with many others in the same field, the suggestion is that these people, and they're all people who've been waiting for asylum claims to be heard, so they're in this limbo, legal limbo.
Yes.
Now, you're suggesting that if they're assessed as being work ready, some of them, because of that legal limbo and because of their traumatised backgrounds, might appear on the surface to be work ready but not be ready for work.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. And you were asking me, we have seen some of these effects on the ground. The answer is yes. So we have seen really kind of concerning cases. We had a case of a mother who had young children who was cut from SRSS payments, and now she's in a situation of destitution, and she doesn't have, I mean, she has young children, and she doesn't have anywhere to go, and she cannot kind of afford childcare. Mm-hmm. We have seen people that have chronic illness or an undiagnosed mental conditions that are far from being work ready, and are going to end up completely depending on charity and are going to be destitute.
Is the issue then the definition of work ready? Surely they, if this is as you say it is for these people, no objective criterion, no fair criterion would judge them work ready.
Well, the problem is that it is still unclear what is exactly going to be the criteria for work ready, because it's the Department of Home Affairs who is going to be setting these criteria. And they haven't released any information or any public documents about how this is going to be done. So what we're seeing since the SRSS changes started last year, as I mentioned, we're definitely not seeing that this is applied in a way that will be consistent to what we think will be work ready, or to what we think is going to be giving people the dignity and the minimum standards that they kind of deserve, particularly considering that they already come from situations of war and conflict, and that they already are quite vulnerable and also quite resilient. So it's very worrying what is happening right now.
No, it just doesn't get any easier for these people, does it? Well,
no,
look, thank you for the work your agency does, and we appreciate you speaking to us on Open House tonight.
No, thank you so much for inviting me to speak. So thank you very much. I hope that this is useful for people to know, and that that people become advocates on this, because this is something that is happening right here, right now, in the community in Australia. So we need to understand it, and we need to see the impacts, and we need to question it.
Thank you, Carolina Gotardo, and she's from Jesuit Refugee Services. What an interesting perspective, and I suppose it's kind of slipped past the notice, but Australia is in those negotiations on new compacts for dealing with refugee issues and migration issues. You'd say on a humanitarian, on a big global scale, apart from global warming and the general evils of poverty and ethnic rivalry, this and relating to it, migration of peoples is just a massive issue on a world scale. And Australia, I think you would like, Open House community, I think you would like for Australia to be a little more generous in the way it approaches it. It is interesting that we're negotiating at that level, as Carolina said, you know, quite happily with people to get a better deal for international migration and refugees, whereas at home we're sending these messages, these dog whistle messages about not wanting to allow people to come here, but then really making them second-class citizens, taking away payments that that Australians would be able to receive, just because we want to characterise how tough we are on the boats. Not happy politics there, not happy politics at all.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.